So hello again.
Welcome to Writing Off the Deep End.
My name is Jeffrey Edwards.
I'm Mary Thaler.
And today we're going to talk about audacity. So audacity is an interesting subject for writers at any stage of the career, I think.
Yeah, I think just being a writer is an act of audacity. The idea that your story and your words are something that other people should read and hear takes a little bit of boldness, a bit of gumption.
So. Yeah, you're putting yourself out there. So you're laying out your inner soul on the line for the public. So
yeah.
There's a kind of, maybe a certain daring do involved as
Almost
well.
Almost arrogance. This was actually one of the first episodes we had planned from the beginning, and it was how we picked the name of this.
So writing off the deep end is writing out of your comfort zone, in a sense, right? So,
yeah.
But all writing is kind of outside your comfort
zone. Taking that leap.
Yeah.
I mean, there is a sort of comfortable writing that
there
exists.
Is.
I think we're striving, though, to write beyond, to write outside of that.
That's right.
Yeah.
So we were actually just talking about some of the projects that we're involved in. So you did an unusual project on Norse gods and mythology somehow, I think.
Well, sort of. And I think it was an audacious project simply because it was a genre that I'd never tried before and that I didn't really see examples of out in the world, but I had got it in my head that I wanted to write a narrative poem in Anglo-Saxon meter. None of the traditional publishing avenues that you can think of, literary journals, books, are really tailored towards long narrative poems.
No, they're not. And even the written form isn't quite the right form for it because it's a very sonorous, musical kind of language as well, right?
Yeah, yes. So. It needs to be read aloud. And in fact, that was what we ended up doing. Jeffrey and I and a few other volunteers that I strong-armed into it produced an audio recording of it. And so bringing that to its fruition meant taking a lot of risks, meant moving out into forms.
And it was this interesting mix of kind of a certain kind of contemporary attitude with something that would be grounded in early Christian era, right? You know, storytelling, right?
Yeah. The odd, and that's where so much interesting stuff happens is when you juxtapose combinations that aren't obvious, that don't come to mind automatically. What about you? Have there been projects that you took on that were...
Well, I have this, so I've been writing this 15-book saga, so this is like not exactly, you know, as a starting out writer, it seems a crazy thing to do.
It's a risk to start it because the end is so far ahead. It's a sort of act of hope or faith.
I knew that when I started the project, that it was a lot, you know, it was maybe a 10-year project, and I'm about 7 years into the project, so, and it's probably a 15-year project, more than a 10-year project.
You always underestimate. It's always an underestimation.
But, you know, so it's a 3,000-page story, I'm about 90% of the first draft is completed, and I'm in the process of rewriting some of the early parts of it, so, and I have a publisher now to carry it forward, which is really interesting, but it's a story that is, so it's what I call a braided quintet, so it's five trilogies that tell the same story five times over from different characters, so it's braided because they're all intertwined.
What strikes me when you describe it is that there really wouldn't have been a shorter, safer version that you could do. The vision required it.
It came out that way from the beginning, and so, you know, and I must admit, when I first wrote it out, I thought, you need to be a decent writer to do this, and I don't know if I'm a decent writer, but I thought, well, I'll give my hand at it, and if I get into trouble, I'll rethink things, and 7 years later, I haven't stopped on this project.
I'd say if you weren't a decent writer when you started a project like that, you'd sure be a decent writer by the time you finished it.
I certainly have noticed that my writing has gotten better over the time, and so some of the early work I'm rewriting now in order to bring the quality up to the sort of a uniform level across the series. Yeah. Right?
But that first step, like starting it, was
so
essential.
So obviously, so there's this question of, I was reading a paper, an article recently about, do you write for your own needs or do you write to meet the needs of a market? Obviously, this kind of work is, there's no market for this kind of book.
And I suspect that writing for the market is a bit of a trap. It seems like something that should be safe, but the market changes. Writing a novel is a multi-year activity, and markets change on the order of months.
Yeah.
So if you're writing for today's market, thinking that that's a safe, comfortable thing to do, you've already missed it.
In fact, when I started the project, indie publishing was relatively new. I mean, in its modern version, obviously, people have been self-publishing books for years, but now it's become a huge industry. So even in that context, in the publishing context, things have changed a lot. So.
you have to do this with a certain hope and faith that nobody knows what the future can bring. So
if you serve your own needs, you at least know the book responds to something in yourself.
My dad always said, please yourself, and at least one person will be happy.
Of course, whether I'm really pleased with my work is another question. But
never pleased. Just eternally unsatisfied. So, we've talked about some risks that we've taken. Why do we think risk-taking is so important? Why do we think this audacity?
Where you need to step out of the beaten path and do something, not necessarily push it artificially, but do something that is distinct and unique. And you can't do that if you follow what everybody else is doing.
Yep.
So you have to take these risks in order to do something that, and you're putting your name on this. I don't think anybody who writes is actually just interested in earning funds. They actually want people to read the work as well.
Yeah, I think there's probably an easier way to make
funds. Yeah, exactly. So, but I do think there is a tendency to focus on getting the next book out to meet a certain readership. You know, certainly people who are quite successful.
Yeah.
Have a tendency to do that. And the risk-taking there is lower than when you're starting out, for instance. So people are starting out, they have no idea whether or not their books are going to make anything, do anything. So there is an element of audacity there. And I think it's important to engage with it. It takes a kind of persistence, a stubbornness to carry it forward.
Quote Winston Churchill, who said, failure is not final. What counts is the will to go on. And I have sometimes thought that if you're not failing a certain amount, then what you're trying is probably not hard enough. That if you're succeeding at everything in life, or in writing, let's just talk about writing, then you need to move up a level. If you're succeeding too much, you're playing in too low a league. I mean, we've talked a lot about formal experimentation, and some of the stuff you do is quite formally inventive. But there's also a certain there is subject matter that can require audacity, and we haven't really talked about that. And in writing, when we write about our characters, they are struggling with all kinds of things, perhaps with illness or death or family. Or relationships, and so I know that when people read